Welcome to You Are an IP Company podcast with Carrie Oberbrunner and Katie Rubino. Our passion is helping entrepreneurs publish, protect, and promote their intellectual property. This podcast is sponsored by Instant IP and Caldwell. And now, get ready for You Are an IP Company.
Folks, we are talking today about how you need a chief intellectual property officer. And we call it the CIPO. Katie and I mentioned it in the book. And I think it's taken off. I think it's resonated. I just came back from Arizona and a few people have read the book that were there and they came up to me and said, look, it's changing our entire company. We're doing things differently. We are capturing our IP the moment we create it. So Katie, that's a new term that you and I kind of came up with in the last 12 months, but why do you think now more than ever there needs to be a CIPO in companies?
Good question. So I'd say a lot of it stems back to this massive shift in intellectual property. So I know we've talked about this before, but just as way of a refresher, in the 1970s, intellectual property, intangible assets, that represented about 10% of the value of the S&P 500. Mm. Whereas by 2020 and even now in 2025, it represents about 90% of the value. So this is a massive shift. And we're seeing this happen even more so today with all these new technologies, all these AI applications. So there's so much IP being generated that once a company really gets to a certain size, it makes sense to have somebody who's really in charge of all of the tracking, the invention disclosures, making decisions on how we're going to protect things, when to protect things, where to protect things, that it's becoming kind of crucial for most companies.
Yeah. And I get that let's just take a company like Strategic Coach that, in my opinion, has done this, or EOS. You know, I see companies that have really said, look, we get that we are an IP company. And because of that, we are going to find a who. And the who could definitely be Caldwell in terms of the one who gets the patents, trademarks, copyrights filed. And I would say internally, people need somebody on their team that it's probably not their main job, but it's part of their job to essentially say, you know what, anytime we create a masterpiece, discover that new Rembrandt, we don't just say, that's nice, but we actually take the 12 steps. And in the book, we do have those 12 steps that I think are really critical. And for those that are watching, I'm going to show it on the screen here. But if you look, Katie, we basically say, yeah, you got to visualize it, but then you got to organize it. And I think this first whole row, visualize, organize, systematize, and normalize. I feel like if somebody can essentially be a CIPO, a chief intellectual property officer, they're doing those first four at a minimum. What are your thoughts?
Definitely. I think especially as the company is growing and you have maybe multiple potential inventors at the company, you need some way to capture those ideas, keep track of them, and also really build up a culture that supports innovation and supports employees to disclose inventions. If it's too restrictive, employees might be too nervous to disclose, or if the company doesn't really incentivize innovation or educate employees on why this is so important, that can really discourage it. So a lot of it too is around the company culture and mindset around this whole concept too.
I think that's really cool that you said that, because somebody did come up to me in Arizona at our Free Zone Strategic Coach event. And they're part of a larger organization, and I'm not going to say which, but they confided in me and said, look, for years now, anytime I come up with IP, the company takes it. And I said, well, what are your options? Do you want to leave the company? And the guy's like, no, I really like the company. But being there, they just take everything. And so now I have some new AI IP that I've created, and I don't know what to do. And so my words were, talk to Katie. Those were my words. But you just mentioned that a company can be too restrictive, and it actually then creates a culture almost of secrecy or silos. What do you think?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And I'd say I see this all the time, especially at universities where students, right, or professors are innovating. And a lot of times in your employment contract or your contract with the university, depending on your role, there will be some intellectual property terms around ownership. So a lot of times, especially at a university, if you create something using university resources, so if you're in a lab, right, using materials that the university owns, or you're testing something on a computer owned by the university or your employer, a lot of times that IP then is owned by the university or the employer. Wow. But you know, you have to look at it in a comprehensive way, because there's also times and places where they're not going to own your IP, right? If you're most of the time, if you're at your home inventing something that is not related to your job,
yeah,
usually it's fine. You can own that outright, but you have to really look at what you're bound to contractually and then figure out where and how can you innovate that's not in conflict with that.
That's deep stuff. Yeah. And I know we talk about that in the book a little bit, how even pastors preaching sermons that then turn into books, that turn into New York Times bestselling books, you know, who owns it? And it is very interesting. So what would you say that a company or university or church needs to do to balance fostering creativity and individuality invention, but still, you know, understanding that they're employees? So
right.
is it different for each company?
It is. I'd say where I've seen a lot of companies go right with this is they'll have some sort of patent committee that will look at all the invention disclosures they receive monthly or quarterly, and they'll review them and figure out, okay, what do we want to move forward patenting? What maybe is still in R&D mode? We're not ready. But then a lot of times once a year, they'll have some employee-wide meeting.
Okay.
They'll give employees whose ideas went on to become patents in that year some sort of recognition. Could be an award, could be monetary. But it kind of fosters that culture, right, where we applaud those of you who come forward with your ideas and who are innovating for the greater good of the company too. And I'd say, you know, most of the time when you invent something on company time, your company is going to own that IP, but they'll also create ways to recognize that contribution. And sometimes too, they'll, you know, let you still practice the invention and give you a license to it. So there's always ways to kind of maneuver here.
Oh, I see. So the public recognition/financial recognition could be enough to create a culture of innovation, but it's also collaborative and not competitive.
That's right.
That makes sense.
And a lot of people too, you know, a lot of inventors, they love being named on patents because it's kind of like scientists when their name is put on a publication, because then it's something they can list on their resume. They can list connected on LinkedIn, and it just kind of, it's a real nod to their career success too, to be named as an inventor on a patent as well.
Gotcha. So as long as the inventor realizes, look, in Michelangelo's day, they had patrons that would essentially fund great art, and it was good for the patron, for their family name. But like you're saying, we think of Michelangelo in the Sistine Chapel, and there is some shared credibility there as well for the patron and the inventor, the company in this case, and the inventor.
Right. That's right.
That's cool. Okay. That makes sense. All right. So the CIPO, what are some traits for this person? I.e., I can already think of some, probably, like, they're detailed, you know, they take ownership. But what do you think are some good traits?
Yeah, I'd say someone who really kind of has a technical background to understand and appreciate the technology.
Yeah.
Because that's really important when you're looking at these invention disclosures, because some of them can be hyper technical.
Okay.
And you have to really immerse yourself in the technology to know and understand it, to then realize, okay, wow, this really is something huge here. Because a lot of times too, when you're just working in a specific field all day, you can kind of overlook the importance of these technical improvements. And so someone who can really understand and appreciate that is important. Mm-hmm. And I think also someone who knows and understands what is the vision and the mission for the company, because you really want to make sure your intellectual property strategy is aligned with your business strategy. And so having the foresight of knowing what your next business goals and milestones are, to then really map the IP strategy to that, is also crucial too.
That makes sense. That is a unique person. So I would say the first step, I mean, just based upon this chat with this other guy, I'll mention his true name, because I actually said, love to feature you on a podcast. So this guy named Ted, totally different guy, but he's the guy who said, look, our company's reading the book. We love it. We've identified somebody in our company. He didn't use the word CIPO, but he basically said they're totally creating a system. So this person, I think, would say, first read the book. Another guy who's doing this is Chris Maxson. Remember, he sent his whole team to our workshop a few weeks ago, that AccuCraft. So, you know, they're taking it seriously. I think that's really cool that there's people who are starting to realize, you know what, we may be in a totally different industry, but we really are an IP company. Why do you think that company who thinks that way will win?
It's an interesting question. So we actually have a client that is in the car wash.
Okay.
So they own this chain of car washes up and down the coast of California. And when you think about a car wash, I love this story, because you don't really think about that as being innovative technology, right? You know, car washes have been around for a long time. The car goes in, gets cleaned up, right? So they approached us a couple years ago to help with some IP strategy. And we ended up writing a handful of patents for them.
Okay.
That they then used to leverage in an $800 million funding round. And about $250 million of that was attributed to their IP portfolio.
Wow.
And so it's, you know, this is an incredible story, because they had the foresight to really adopt a lot of new technology, robotics, automation, AI, software into their car washes. And they were able to really execute so well on it. And now you know, they're off to the races using the cash to expand locations and everything. And so it just shows you that no matter what you're working in, there's ways to adopt and integrate technology into your company. And in my experience, the companies that do that earlier, they really reap the rewards later on from that.
So they're the thought leader, the early adopter, and therefore they kind of claim and own the space.
That's right. Yep.
That's cool. Okay. I love that. So what other characteristics, somebody who owns, understands technical, somebody who perhaps, you know, reads the book, what other things do they have to have, like a good trust with the CEO? Because I'm sure they could kind of go rogue a little.
Yeah, good trust with the CEO, the C-suite. But I think also somebody who's good with the employees too, because the employees are going to be going to that person for questions to also disclose ideas. And you want somebody who's well respected, who the employees are going to feel comfortable talking to.
That's true.
And I see this all the time with, you know, students at the universities when they have to go disclose something to the tech transfer office. They're very timid and afraid. And they, you know, sometimes this probably sounds wild, but they've even asked me, like, would they get arrested if they maybe did something with resources before disclosing it to the tech transfer at the university? And so there's a lot of hesitation and fear.
Yeah.
And so really being able to calm those hesitations and make people feel comfortable and reassured too, I think that's really key as well.
I like that. So it's almost like they need to have the respect of the C-suite, their best interests in mind, but also be able to have a good front stage presence with the employees that garners trust.
That's right.
That's cool. I like that. We're kind of building a cool profile. Well, and I, you know, I've studied a lot about Edison as well, because he was an inventor and he had that Menlo Park, which attracted huge, huge innovation. And I think people have to research, fact check me, but I think his model was essentially that you work at Menlo Park, like it's all going to the collective good. And so we assign a lot of patents to Edison, even though it was, you know, some of his team.
Right. Well, and I'd say too, that was really the whole thought process behind the patent system in the United States, right? We wanted to create a system that recognizes innovation, rewards innovation, but also creates and incentivizes innovation for the collective good of all of mankind. And so that's, you know, you see this too a lot around the world with these different epicenters of innovation that pop up. So, you know, I'm based in Boston, and Boston, especially in the past 10 years, has become kind of the Silicon Valley of the East Coast.
Really? Okay.
Because there are so many tech companies coming here.
Yeah.
And, it's become a place. Kendall Square, right, a mile down the road, has become the mecca of life science innovation. And it's become a place where all of these companies looking to get into tech and biotech, they come set up shop here because there's so much collective knowledge in these industries. And we see this too, you know, in areas around the country and the world too, these different innovation hubs, Austin, Texas, right?
That was just there yesterday. Yeah.
And even down in Raleigh, Durham area, there's tons of startup activity there. And so it's really incredible to see how this is all playing out and how the, you know, innovation just spurs on further innovation.
That is true. So basically, if you were an inventor back in Edison's day, I mean, you could essentially jump many levels by getting around that space with like-minded people, just because of the, in fact, I want to show our slide again. I almost feel like this makes a ton of sense. I know we didn't build it with that in mind, but you look at Edison and Menlo Park, they did everything but the digitized part of it. Instant IP wasn't around then, but you certainly had the patent office. But I mean, they were kind of doing these things, yeah. I think.
Oh, definitely. And, you know, they were doing it too without even realizing that's what they were doing. And, you know, and you think about that, what I think is most fascinating too is, you know, the light bulb, right? That's technology that's still we use today, and it's so vital to mankind.
It's crazy. It is true. Yeah. And I mean, I've looked at Edison versus Tesla and DC versus AC power and the Ediphone. But it's not always, in my opinion, there's some marketing behind this as well. In other words, I just saw a really cool Netflix while I was, you know, I'm training to do cycling for France, and there's not much to do when it's cold. So you gotta watch a video while you're cycling. But it was these two guys who essentially are racing up mountains, climbing. And it's kind of a new sport where you don't just climb it, you see how fast you can climb it. And one of the guys was better, but he says the other guy was better at marketing it. Mm-hmm. So how much does that go into your CIPO or even this whole concept that you could have two inventors, but if one, you know, like him or hate him, Elon seems to be able to market, you know? And even when he demoed the Cybertruck the first time, I don't know if you saw this, but he said, yeah, this glass is unbreakable. And then someone gave him like a kettlebell or something. And he's like, watch. And then he hit it and it broke.
It did? Oh, I didn't see this.
It broke. And so the next day over all the headlines was like mocking Elon Musk. Like, what an idiot. He demos a Cybertruck with unbreakable glass and then it broke. But then a few days later, you start exploring and you're like, you know what? He might have done that on purpose because he got so much press for the Cybertruck. And since then, they've shown demos of it being shot with bullets and all this stuff. But what do you think about that? That like IP is a thing, but also marketing the IP is a thing.
Yeah, I'd say, you know, marketing makes sense, especially if you're looking to monetize your IP, right? So if you're looking for potential licensees, people need to know who you are and what your technology is and your platform to be able to license it from you. So that's why, too, a lot of times putting information out there about your patents and putting people on notice about it, it's another way to just put the word out there about your tech so that interested parties can find you and seek you out to talk about it too.
Well, look at Steve Jobs and his famous Apple demos for his iPhone and iPad. And then what I'm looking at, Katie, is his marketing of his IP created the screensaver people, the iPhone protector people, you know, this little circle mag charger, whatever you call it. But I mean, do you think almost that creates IP partners? Because Apple's not creating all the cases and the screen protectors and, you know, the cords and the chargers. What do you think? That if you market it well, you almost like draw IP collaborators?
Right. Oh, definitely. Because the thing is, too, so much of innovation these days, it's this known sum of parts, right? It's these known parts you're bringing together, but it's that unique way in which you bring them all together. And so if you have this new iPhone, then that's an opportunity for someone who makes screen protectors, right? To say, oh, wow, here's this new way I can make a screen protector that serves a new market. And so it just kind of further enhances the opportunity for new innovation to come out and build upon your underlying technology too.
That's interesting. So whether it's Uber Eats, you know, this Uber first and then now Uber Eats, and it's almost like you open up new levels that people have never even thought of.
Right. I mean, look at Amazon, right? It started in a garage as a bookstore.
Yes.
Now you can go get a whole medical exam.
Yeah.
You know, through them. It's like wild, the expanded scope of services that have come out from them over the years.
That and the AWS, how essentially Jeff Bezos doesn't even know how much companies and data is being uploaded. But you're right, they're in so many industries now that you wouldn't even think about.
Right, groceries. I mean, you can go on there and order groceries and have it delivered to your house in an hour.
Like, yeah.
Things you just, it's mind blowing when you take a step back and look at it.
But you know, you had to think differently, because again, second Netflix I saw recently, these bike rides are very long. But he said to his stakeholders, his investors, you're not going to see profit for 20 years. So in other words, he said, I'm going to bet on building the infrastructure. And I want to essentially, he didn't use these words, but he essentially wanted to build the railroad.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to control the railroad, the infrastructure, which now then, yes, last night I ordered something and it will be at my house later today, and I'll get an alert on my phone. And then if I don't like it, they've partnered with Kohl's store or UPS, and now I can just go right back there and return it, and UPS now benefits. You know, like it's just amazing.
It really is. It's amazing too how it's now those returns are everywhere.
Yeah. Right?
Like you.
Oh yeah.
One block and there's 10 places you could go return it.
And like you said, a drone or a truck. You know, it's basically created and leveraged and optimized so many other industries that aren't even part of Amazon. Many people are benefiting. They even showed how cities are begging Amazon and giving incredible tax breaks so that they will build in their city.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right. It's like one idea, Amazon in a garage, Jeff Bezos saying, you know, we're gonna make this thing happen. Did you know the story about the name?
No.
So I think the name was, it was originally going to be something like, it starts with an R. I think it was Relentless.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the name of Amazon was going to be called Relentless, and he said no. Amazon's the longest, largest river. Plus, if it's A, it'll be in the beginning of stock exchanges and anything else. And so we want to be prominent position. So it is shocking. And this whole story I saw was saying, have they gone too far? And is it a monopoly? So, you know, it was trying to expose a little bit of controversy there, but Edison, Elon Musk, I mean, you look throughout centuries and there have been these people, Da Vinci, that just, I call it pattern recognition. You know, they were putting this piece here and how that connects here and space travel here. And It is wild, but I do think to land the plane here, the IP protection piece is key.
Mm-hmm.
Because if these people don't protect, you might say, well, they don't make profit, but they also lose some of the branding, quality control, consumer trust. Maybe just talk a little bit about that it's not just profit driven, it's really the advancement of the tech as well.
Right. Well, and you don't want to be in a place where you don't protect anything and then your competitors come in and box you out so that then yes. You're unable to even, you know, you're put out of business too.
Wow.
That someone comes in and tries to prevent you from using your company name or brand, and then you have to do a whole rebrand, and that can be very expensive. Especially if you have a lot of products sitting around that has your old branding on it too. So it's always, the sooner you can start protecting and securing your own rights, the better in a position you're going to be down the road. And it's just going to kind of create greater opportunities to collaborate and control how those collaborations look like and what they look like too.
You bring up another good point that, sorry, Katie, you're going to think I'm just watching Netflix all the time. I swear I'm cycling. I swear I'm cycling too, but
I've seen the videos that you
have seen. Yeah.
I don't question that.
Yeah. But the founder, the McDonald's story, the Ray Kroc story.
Yeah.
This is interesting that he locked the McDonald's brothers out of their own name.
Right.
I mean, at the end of the movie, they had to take down their, I thought, oh my gosh, this is IP right here. They had to take down the name of their own last name.
Mm-hmm.
And then they went and they couldn't even use McDonald's. They had to call it just M. And then sure enough, they went out of business, their final store. But yeah, they couldn't franchise it. And I think, Katie, make a note. I think next podcast, we gotta unpack the founder
and yeah.
that IP journey. Because I think there's a lot of IP lessons in that.
There is. I saw that movie a while ago, so I need to refresh on
it. All right. So you watch it again, and then next podcast,
Thursday, yeah.
We'll talk about the IP lessons from the founder. And I think that'll be a big one.
Definitely.
All right, folks. Identify your chief intellectual property officer. And I will tell you that if you go to instantipcertification.com, we are literally creating a process and plan so that your people can help you internally with this position. All right. Check out Caldwell if you need traditional IP protection. I do it all the time. And it was great being here today, Katie. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. We'll see you, folks.
Thank you for listening to You Are an IP Company podcast with Carrie Oberbrunner and Katie Rubino. Visit instantip.today and caldwelllaw.com for more help on your IP journey. Remember, your ideas are valuable. Protect them today.